It's Wednesday, November 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Islamic State fighters being cleared from Mosul, possible war crimes in the fight around Aleppo.
They can't come and change their vote because of the latest revelation, either with Hillary Clinton or with Donald Trump.
Large numbers of U.S. voters are casting ballots early. Also ahead, mixed signals from China's economy and new electronic dance music. It's all on today's International Edition. Iraqi special forces seized control of state television facilities inside Mosul Tuesday as a loose-knit combat coalition allied with Baghdad pressed an offensive to drive Islamic State extremists from the city. Kurdish and Western journalists embedded with the force said it was meeting stiff resistance inside the city, encountering concrete blast walls and roadside bombs planted by Islamic State fighters to slow the Iraqi advance. The Iraqi military also said an armored division was approaching southeastern districts as part of a push to free outlying villages and encircle the city. Separate coalition units pressing toward Mosul from the north were also reported in control of several key villages. The long-awaited offensive comes 2 weeks after the coalition of Iraqi and Kurdish forces backed by Shiite militia, Sunni Arab tribesmen, and U.S.-led airstrikes began the largest military operation in the country since 2003 to clear the city of Islamic State fighters. Meanwhile, more continued fighting in Syria. And as the violence escalates in the eastern and western portions of Aleppo, the United Nations warns both Syrian government and rebel forces may be guilty of war crimes in that divided northern Syrian city. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
Rebel forces seeking to break the siege of eastern Aleppo have intensified attacks on western Aleppo, which is under Syrian government control. As a consequence, civilian casualties are mounting. The United Nations says in the past few days, more than 40 people have been killed and many injured. UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs spokesman Jens Lajerke says this was due to the high number of rockets indiscriminately launched by armed opposition groups on civilian areas in western Aleppo.
They also note that at the same time, there are some 275,000 people that remain trapped in eastern Aleppo, that is, under siege. No aid coming in, no people going out, unfortunately. They also note and condemn a hit on a building in western Aleppo which houses the UN hub in western Aleppo. That happened on Sunday.
The UN Human Rights Office also condemns the heavy loss of life in western Aleppo. Spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the high number of civilian casualties suggests armed opposition groups are violating international humanitarian law by launching indiscriminate attacks on civilian areas.
The reported use of ground-based missiles, along with the use of armored vehicles loaded with explosives, used in an area containing more than 1 million civilian inhabitants, is completely unacceptable and may constitute a war crime.
Shamdasani says shelling of opposition-held eastern Aleppo by government forces and their allies reportedly is also continuing. This despite statements by the Russian Ministry of Defense that Syrian and Russian air forces are observing a moratorium. She notes strikes against hospitals, schools, marketplaces, water facilities, and bakeries are commonplace. She warns the strikes may amount to war crimes if proven to be intentional. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We turn now to find out what's happening in social media. Michael Lippin joins me in Studio 22 with the latest trends online. Michael, let's take a look at what's trending. Understand that we're just 1 week away, obviously, from the U.S. election.
That's right, Jim.
And what election story is getting big attention on Twitter?
Well, I'll tell you, the top election-related Twitter trend in the U.S. today is a former Miss Universe, 39-year-old Venezuelan-born American Alicia Machado. Now, as some of our listeners may recall, she became a center of attention in September when her name came up in the first presidential debate. It was Democrat nominee Hillary Clinton who cited Machado as a victim of misogyny from Republican nominee Donald J. Trump, who owned the Miss Universe pageant at the time that Machado won it. Now, today, Machado campaigned with Hillary in Dade City, Florida. And as the former Miss Universe spoke to the crowd, she repeated the insults that she says Trump directed at her, insults that Hillary also mentioned in the debate. Now, Machado says Trump called her Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeping, mocking her weight and her Latin background. Now, in the presidential debate, Trump expressed surprise about the insults, although he hasn't explicitly denied saying them. Now, Alicia Machado is on Twitter at MachadoOficial, and a short time ago, she tweeted an Instagram picture of her and Hillary Clinton raising their joined hands at the Florida rally.
Wow. Well, what are Twitter users saying about that campaign appearance?
Well, you know, Hillary supporters are obviously happy that Machado is bringing up an issue that has hurt Trump with female voters, his history of insulting remarks toward women. But Hillary critics were also quite vocal, arguing that Machado is hardly a good role model or campaign surrogate for Hillary. You know, in late September, U.S. media reported that in the late 1990s, a judge in Venezuela accused Machado of threatening to kill him for indicting her then-boyfriend for attempted murder. The family of the victim in that case even alleged that Machado drove her boyfriend's getaway car, something she denied. Now, one Trump supporter on Twitter wrote, "If the Hillary Clinton campaign is recycling Alicia Machado, they're in full-blown panic mode and straight out of options."
Well, the intensity of this campaign sure to gain over the next week as we draw closer to the election. A lot of people are going to be tweeting about this on their iPhones. I understand there's some iPhone news out there.
There is iPhone news today, and it's about the yet-to-be-released iPhone 8 that's trending on Facebook with more than 1 million people talking about it. It's kind of strange because it's only been a month since electronics giant Apple released the iPhone 7 here in the U.S., and already attention is turning to what will be next year's expected iPhone 8, which tech news site Mashable says could include wireless charging for the first time. What do you think of that?
Wow, that would be an amazing technological advancement.
I would love wireless charging.
Yes, it'd be cool. We'll do it right here in the studio, maybe one day. Well, thanks so much, Michael Lupin.
Thank you.
The studio with the latest trends online. And you can follow him on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. I'm at VOA Stevenson. And we also invite you to follow the International Edition stream. That's found at VOA_IE. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, peace activists urge India and Pakistan to end deadly border clashes. China unveils a new stealth fighter. Asian observers don't expect Trump and Clinton to radically change foreign policy. Vietnam rice industry faces threat from climate change and Mekong dams. Enforced disappearances rise in Bangladesh. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. November 8th is the election day here in the United States, and we will find out who the new U.S. president is at that time. You'll find out right here at Voice of America. Polls are showing the race between Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump are tightening. A recent ABC News Washington Post poll shows Clinton with a 1-point lead over Trump. Another poll by the Los Angeles Times shows Trump with a 3.6 advantage. The Clinton campaign has struggled during the past week with the reopening of an investigation into Clinton's emails. And late last month, the Obama administration announced premiums for health care plans sold through a government marketplace would rise by 25%. Clinton has run as a firm backer of that program. A key state in the election is, as you might guess, Florida. Clinton is campaigning there today, and VOA's Sarah Williams spoke with Daniel Smith. He's a professor of political science at the University of Florida. And speaking from Gainesville, he talks about how the election is proceeding so far in the state.
Well, there are millions of Floridians who have already cast their ballots, and I know that may sound strange to some of your listeners, but Florida has a very permissive vote-by-mail program, and so we've had well over 2 million people who have cast a ballot just by voting through the mail. And we also have a very robust system of what we call early in-person voting here in Florida. And that is also going like gangbusters, where we have had close to 2 million votes cast already by people coming to a polling place near where they live and casting a ballot.
Certainly, there's several factors involving Florida. One, it has a large Latino community. There's also a fairly large senior citizen community. How could this play in the election?
Sure. When you take a look at Florida's demographics, we do skew older. But what is really the hallmark of Florida voting is that older voters tend to turn out disproportionately more than their younger compatriots who are registered to vote. So it's not only that we're an old state, it's that older voters vote at a much higher rate than younger voters. And so it disproportionately skews the electorate to an older and as well as a whiter electorate. That said, we now have about 17% of our registered voters are Hispanic, about 13.5% are African American. And what we're seeing so far is that Hispanic voters are turning out to vote at a rate that is much higher than they did in 2012. African Americans, not so much. And that's going to be the real key for who's going to win the presidency in terms of Florida, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, in terms of the next week of early voting, absentee ballots coming in, as well as, of course, on Election Day on November 8th.
Now, I had heard that Hillary Clinton had a larger amount of offices for her campaign in the state, apparently, than Trump did, even though Trump does have property, owns, property in Palm Beach. But do you know, are there recent figures about how that is shaping up, about the popularity of the two of them?
Right. So Hillary Clinton has had a very strong presence on the ground in terms of not only volunteers but paid staffers. They are going to be crucial in terms of getting people to turn out to vote who haven't already voted early or by mail. And we're talking about another 9 million or so voters who are eligible to vote. We've had over 4 million votes cast. We have about 13.5 million registered voters. So there are a lot of votes to be tracked down and brought home for either of the two candidates. Hillary Clinton does not seem to have the same type of enthusiasm among many of her supporters or just rank-and-file Democrats or no-party affiliates, unlike Donald Trump. The question is, has Donald Trump's supporters already come out to vote and there are less likely to have in reserve coming to Election Day, and whether or not Hillary Clinton is going to be able to get these less excited voters to the polls and cast a vote for her. So those ground troops are going to be very important for the Clinton campaign. That Donald Trump doesn't have them doesn't seem to be affecting him yet, but it might when push comes to shove towards November 8th.
The last few days, there's been so much controversy in this campaign concerning reopening of a FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton, some emails involving Hillary Clinton. Does that seem to have had any impact yet, say in Florida? Perhaps it's too soon.
Well, the interesting thing is it has absolutely no impact for, at the time, the 3 million or so people who had already cast their ballots. They can't come and change their vote because of the latest revelation, either with Hillary Clinton or with Donald Trump. Those are in the bank, and voters may have some regrets. My sense is that the campaign has already raced so far to the bottom with so much trash being thrown one direction or another that another scandal either way is probably not going to change too many people's minds at this point in the game.
Daniel Smith, professor of political science at the University of Florida, and we remind you that next Tuesday is Election Day in the United States. Tune in to the Voice of America, whether it's Tuesday late your time or Wednesday morning your time. We will be on for hours with wall-to-wall coverage of all the latest election results, and you'll hear the winners first right here on the Voice of America. Chinese stocks snapped a four-day losing streak Tuesday after an official survey showed the country's crucial manufacturing sector expanding at the fastest pace in more than 2 years during October. The Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, came in at 51.2. That was compared with 50.4 in September. Anything above 50 is considered expansion, below it, contraction. China has been undergoing a construction boom, and its economy expanded a respectable 6.7% in this year's third quarter. It looks set to meet the official annual target of between 6.5% and 7%. However, the world's second largest economy is still cutting excessive capacity in heavy industry, while the global economy for its exports remains sluggish. Shane Oliver, chief economist at the Sydney-based AMP Capital, tells VOA's Victor Beattie it's the latest sign that the Chinese economy, after months of weakness, appears to have stabilized.
We saw a growth slowdown in China into earlier this year, but since then the business survey, the so-called PMI, has been initially tracking sideways and then more recently showing signs of a rising trend. And it wasn't just the official PMI. Another survey produced by a company called Caixin, a private PMI, also rose, and a survey of non-manufacturing conditions or services conditions held at a reasonably high level. So all of those indicators tell us that the Chinese economy is seeing reasonable growth as we come into the December quarter.
Is there a concern about the continued downward pressure on imports and exports?
I think there is concern both in China and globally about global trade. Global trade is growing at its slowest pace since the Great Recession of late last decade. And partly that's due to slower growth in developed countries, but also due to slower growth in China than we've seen, say, a few years ago. And, of course, that has been reflected in slow import growth in China, in fact, falling imports and weak exports. But I think it's not just China that's responsible for that. I think other countries are as well. And I guess the other factor in all of this is that China is increasingly becoming a services-oriented economy. And as we know, with services, they tend to be less traded around the world. And that's another factor, I think, why Chinese goods exports and imports have slowed, that we're just not seeing the same growth in industrial production in China that we used to.
Well, Shane, you know, of course, the Chinese government was involved in stimulus efforts. Are those going to ease off, say, the coming year?
My feeling is that stimulus efforts for the time being are on hold. The Chinese will do whatever they can to make sure growth continues around the current pace, but they probably don't want to see stronger growth than what we're seeing at the moment. Officially, they've been targeting growth around 6.5% to 7% in terms of GDP. And I think they would regard the business surveys, the PMIs, as being consistent with that. So they would probably say mission accomplished for the time being.
Shane Oliver cautions that Chinese authorities won't entirely end stimulus, or that might cause a slowdown, but he does expect a slowdown about 6% for 2017. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
On November 8th, American voters will choose their next president. We'll provide you with the latest updates. Will it be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Will third-party candidates like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein have an impact on the final outcome? What does that mean for Americans and the world? It's all here on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Another electronic dance music DJ has found success, Sarah Williams and Border Crossings host Larry London.
Today we're going to talk about an electronic dance music producer. We've addressed this phenomenon a few times in the past, but today we're going to look at a guy who at 20 was the youngest ever to be named the world's number one DJ. And that's according to DJ Magazine. His name is Martin Garrix, and he is from the Netherlands. And right now he is doing very, very well with his project that's out these days and a new song that he's got recorded on the charts with Bibi Rexha. She's an Albanian singer who is just tearing things up. She's just hot, really, really hot right now. And she's about to release her own solo debut album. But Martin Garrix is the big story, along with the other stories in EDM, like Flume, who we covered recently, and Skrillex, and Diplo, and Major Lazer, and Tiesto. Now, Martin Garrix got his start when he was a teenager. In 2004, he kind of fell in love with the whole phenomenon of creating and mixing music in his own home, which he did on his laptop in his bedroom. And then about 10 years later, he released his very first song, which became a hit. And so here we are now with the new single from Martin Garrix called In the Name of Love.
If I told you this was only gonna hurt, if I warned you that the fire's gonna burn, would you walk in? Would you let me do it first? Do it all in the name of love.
Well, yeah, you said he had his first hit when he's 20. How old is he now?
He is 20.
That's, he's still 20.
He's 20 right now. He had his first hit when in about 2014. So that was about 6 years ago, which would make him 14 at the time, because now he's 20. And now he's on the charts with In the Name of Love, which we just heard with Bebe Rexha. And that is already one of Spotify's top downloaded songs in the UK and here in the United States. And it's climbing up the charts very quickly, already a top 20 hit for Martin Garrix. Now, that's a name that you haven't heard much in the past, but you're going to be hearing from in the future. He's from the Netherlands. As I mentioned, he's a very, very popular DJ. He's on tour. He's performing at all the big music festivals. And he was just included in a new EDM-themed documentary, which is called What We Started, which will show the history of EDM and the recent surgence of the style of music called electronic dance music.
So EDM is going really strong.
It continues to go strong. It's just it's an amazing phenomenon that has not been, you know, new to Europe. In Europe, they've had many, many people doing the DJ stuff for years. David Guetta, DJ Sammy. There have been many, many. But here in the United States, Afrojack, Tiesto, all of these people have just come along and remixed music and also created some new music and taken the world by storm. And Martin Garrix is nominated for many music awards at the Teen Choice Awards and the MTV Europe Music Awards. He's nominated in just all the categories for EDM these days.
Wow. Very impressive. Thanks so much, Larry. That's VOA's Larry London, the host of Border Crossings.
You've been listening to International Edition. For director Tracy Carter and engineer Dan Crafton, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thanks for joining us and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Susan Markham, Senior Coordinator for Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment for the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, wrapped up a five-day visit to Lao PDR in October, during which she met Lao education officials and visited schools to pave the way for the expansion of the U.S. government's Let Girls Learn initiative to Laos, which President Barack Obama announced during his visit to the country in September. Following a meeting with the Minister of Education and Sports, Senjuan Lachantabun, and senior education officials in Vientiane on October 4th, Ms. Markham and her delegation traveled to Luang Prabang and Udomche provinces, where she discussed education and learning needs with teachers, administrators, students, and parents. We are thrilled to have this opportunity to engage with Lao officials, teachers, parents, and students to learn more about education in this beautiful country, Ms. Markham said. Through the Let Girls Learn initiative, we can find new ways to collaborate and help ensure that adolescent girls and boys get the education they need to be successful. On October 7th, Ms. Markham met representatives of the Lao Women's Union, Lao National Commission for Mothers and Children, the Lao National Commission for the Advancement of Women's Secretariat, and other donors and civil society groups focused on women and development to further understand the needs of girls and women across Laos. The U.S. government's Let Girls Learn initiative, championed by First Lady Michelle Obama, works to address the range of challenges preventing adolescent girls from attaining a quality education. Let Girls Learn harnesses existing programs and invests in new efforts to improve educational opportunities for girls worldwide. The United States is proud to work with Laos to help Lao girls develop their full potential for their benefit and for the benefit of their communities and the people of Laos.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.